Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome again. This is Chinook Echoes. I'm Paula Schiller. Last summer, Native people from all over the state were invited to come to Anchorage to testify on the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. They were there to tell the federal government how not to interfere with the practice of Native religions. However, one thing that came out of the testimony is that it's hard to apply the term religion to Native beliefs and traditions. Involved is a concept of living that doesn't lend itself to a few summary phrases in the back of a huge governmental report, but that's what happened to Alaska's testimony. It deserves more. So in this series of programs, we're hearing some excerpts.
My name is George Honishiga. I was born and raised at Point Lane, lived a few years at Wainwright, some couple years at Barrow.
You're an Eskimo, George?
And I'm a full-blooded Eskimo. I'm representing the Federal Program Parents Committee, and we, as a committee, are from all the villages in the North Slope area. We seek for monies to protect something like religion. I think, like Raymond said, that there is no definition for religion, but that definition was made for us by church leaders. They are the ones that are hurting our religious leaders call Eskimo or maybe Indian religion. I lived with my grandmother since I was about 5 years old till I was about 17, and she told me a lot of stories about the Eskimo ways of life. And a lot of it, I believe, were the Eskimo beliefs, or what the people would call religion. I was on a beluga hunting last week, and there was my two brothers with me and two other men. Now, after we cut up the beluga, one of the men said, we have to cut the head off. My youngest brother said, what for? He said, and then he said, so that spirit can go back and we can get some more belugas later on. And so these are some of the beliefs that we still believe in. And same thing with the seal. After you bring home a seal, if you have a wife, if you don't, your mother is supposed to get a cup of water and pour it down into the seal's mouth so the spirit can go back to the seal, so and you can get more seals later on. Same with the bearded seal. There are a lot of beliefs that I have forgotten, and because we have some beliefs that we think that are true, and we do them automatically without questioning.
The next speaker is a younger man, Garrett Alcon of Nome, but he also was told stories to believe in.
I'd like to pass on to you what has been passed on to me from my father. He died 13 years ago. I was very young when he addressed a lot of things to me. He was a man of very few words. But the things that he addressed me with are definitely instilled in my mind, and I couldn't understand them at the time because I never related with them. One of the things that he had mentioned, and this is in a sense an educational religious aspect, was take care of your youth, the young ones, for they're your future. And take care of your elder, for their year of wisdom. And it went into our hunting practices. I've been a whaling captain, I'd say, approximately 7 years now. We have shallow waters in Norton Sound, so we hunt beluga. But immediately after our first catch, in relation to what my father had mentioned, is we always, the hunters, the boat crew, would cut up sections and deliver to the old people. We never permitted them to come down. It's not that it wasn't our practice. We immediately went to them in our sense of appreciation for the things that they have taught us. Some of our elders, like, for example, my mother, I'm the third generation that she's risen, is 84 and still going strong. And I have spent a lot of time talking with her about my family background. My great-great-grandfather was an Anutkak. As everybody else says, a shaman. It was recorded, and this comes out of Public Health Service, there's a book says that no man has ever recalled being in the womb of a woman. But my great-grandfather told of places where he had been that only his mother knew. Seeing out from her belly, it was like seeing out of a window. And he regretted having to be born because life was so sweet and comfortable inside. He didn't want to enter this world. Another one of the things that had been passed down to me was when you plan for the future, don't plan for yourself, don't plan for your children. Plan for your grandchildren because it'll give you more foresight to the future. You can see further. And for me, this was an education and a religion type of thing that was passed on. In hunting with the boat crew, I had an uncle, and regrettably he's gone too. I'd love to take him with me because every time we went out, every animal that we killed, okay, this is the way we're going to do it. And he would tell the story of who would get what. The person who sighted this will get the arm. The person who shot it will get the heart, the liver, and a hindquarter. The person who harpooned it will get the ribs. The person who cut it up will get some blubber and some segments of the backbone, the meat. And we always threw the backbone and the guts back into the ocean. And of course, as everybody else mentioned, it was to have continuity in our wildlife, our game. Every hunt was that way, never missed. So I can still picture in my mind when we shot an ugruk, as we pulled up to the ice and it was lying there, he'd always, okay, wait a minute, I'm gonna tell you a story. And as we went through the process of cutting it up, the story would come out from the old days. How the family or how the village would share. Not too long ago, I had the misfortune, or fortune, whichever you may say, of being busted by U.S. Department of Fish and Game, or Alaska Department of Fish and Game, for shooting a moose out of season. Well, at the time I was a police officer in Nome, I was aware that there were some older people who needed meat. I went out and shot a moose and gave it away. Well, I got busted for it. I had delivered all the meat to all the older people. And when they came with a search warrant to my house asking me for the meat, I said, I don't have any. So why don't you? Did you eat the whole carcass before we got here within a week? I said, no. I gave it away. It's subsistence. I gave it to my people, the older people who can't go out and hunt, the older people who didn't have any meat. The cost of meat is very expensive. Well, I suffered the consequence. But I did what I believed in, what my father and my grandfather had passed on. If you need it, you go out and get it. Nothing is wasted. The only thing that was discarded at the time was the guts and the part of the head. But everything else had gone to the old folks. Well, next month I'll be off my probation. Thank question.
Garrett Alcon of Nome, testifying on the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. It's an act some people say is one of the most important tools Native people have to use in protecting their culture. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook. I'm Paula Schiller. Last summer, late August, a handful of people gathered in a stuffy conference room in Anchorage to give testimony, and to hear it, on the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. It promised to be yet another hearing on an obscure issue, and even for those interested, it came at a most inconvenient time. The people immediately concerned with Native religion in Alaska were out at fish camps, on construction sites, off fighting fires, working at jobs or subsistence. So most of the speakers were official representatives of the regional nonprofits, professional testifiers, or elders who could spare the time, and a few officials who happened to be in town anyway. Maybe it was the nature of the testimony. Religion is an emotional subject to begin with. Or maybe it was the presence of elders, or just the combination of Native people from all parts of Alaska in a small room listening to each other. In any case, the testimony became more and more personal. And after the prepared speeches were delivered, people from the audience were inspired to testify. Among them, Tundra Times reporter Diane Benson.
I always get nervous when I sit in front of a bunch of people and try to talk about anything. But first of all, as you can see, I'm going to have a baby. And so I'm taking more of an interest in the future than I was before I was pregnant. Because before I was pregnant, I was thinking a lot of myself. And I kept thinking there's plenty of time for changes for the future, to concentrate more on the things that I want to know of my own people, or the things that I want to go back to, because I've been living in Anchorage and Fairbanks for so long. Now I'm trying to sell everything because I want to go back home, because this baby's due in September and I want him or her to be back there with my grandparents. And I've been really concerned about it lately. I don't know, when I feel this thing growing inside of me, that's life and that's a religion to me, if that's what they call it, believing in something. And I believe in the baby. And I believe in being with my own people and the family structure that we were used to. See, my grandparents, there's a couple concerns that I have, because my grandparents, they grew up with remembering first contacts with white people, the days of Russians and the Russian religion, the church. And they learned from my grandma Marshall and others things about the real Tlingit way. And these they wouldn't pass down. And the reason why they wouldn't pass it down is because when they got to go to SJ when they were kids and they were slapped, or I mean they had their hands slapped in their and punished enough for 20 years to not want to speak out so freely about what their belief was, or to say a Tlingit word, or to eat, you know, some hooligan oil or anything. And time changed. So 50 years later, you know, Alaska becomes a state, things change, and my grandparents are beginning to be told that, well, now you can speak your language. And they always kept it in the house. They wouldn't speak it on the street. One day when I was in going to college in the early part of this decade, I wrote to my grandparents and told them, you know, I really wanted to learn about our way, our language, more, because there was so much forgotten. Well, I wrote a really long letter, and she wrote a really long letter back, and she said the first thing was that her and Grandpa had both cried really hard when they got that letter, because they had thought that it was just hopeless, because a lot of the people in my family, they married non-native. They took on non-native ways. They forgot what it was like to fish. They forgot a lot of things. They forgot what the totem symbols or anything means. And they left, some live in San Francisco or New York or someplace. They thought it was over. And whenever I had mentioned in my younger years, I want to know what happened such and such a time, or what this and that is, or how come you don't make the baskets anymore, Grandma? And she'd say they wouldn't want to talk about it because they were afraid to. When they got that letter from me, saying I made it very clear I wasn't going to give up, because there's something real strong there, because the city isn't my place. I didn't grow up in it, and I don't want to carry its values. I don't want my child to carry its values. So I am looking at my grandparents who are willing to teach me a lot of things, but when it comes to maybe talking about something delicate like what you do, some certain traditional things like what you do traditionally at the birth of a baby, or what you do in talking about shamans or something like this, they're not so easy to talk to about it because of all the Christian influence that has happened since the arrival of Western people. So now we're having this hearing and everything, and we're reaching a time where the American government says, gee, we've been doing wrong to all you people all this time. So we're going to let you have, you know, we really want you to go ahead and speak your language and practice your, you know, ceremonies or whatever. And some of the people are still sitting there remembering the days when they were punished severely for saying anything or doing anything. That way, when they sent all the children off to go to boarding schools, which is just now beginning to stop. I don't want my child in a boarding school. As a matter of fact, I'd rather he wasn't even in one of the public schools, because I don't feel like I learned that much. I learned more from my grandparents and my people back home. I learned a lot more about values and strength. So one big problem that I see is, you know, good intentions are good intentions, but it's going to take time. When you look at the Southeast region, there's a lot of influence. I was talking to a girlfriend from Craig one day, and I was talking to her about her little boy and how she's raising him because we both have kids and everything, and she's telling me how proud she was because he could say his little prayers and things from the Bible. And she wanted to know what kind of a Christian name I was going to give my baby. I said, I'm not. I said, I'm going to let my grandmother name the baby Tlingit name, and that will be the only name, because I don't need all these other attachments. And I don't, if it, she says, isn't that going to be hard on him? I thought it was hard on me to have this Christian name. I don't know. Some people tell me that I'm doing wrong because I want to keep things. I want to remember, and I want to know it's there. And I don't want somebody to tell me that it's gone, and that the cultural and beliefs of my people or my ways is gone. I'm tired of hearing how we're a vanishing American, because I see a lot of us here right now. I don't see nobody going anywhere. And the only time when I was young that I was told, okay, you're an Indian, because white kids would tell me this in school with some other names attached to it, I guess. So I was reminded constantly in that way what I was. But the federal government had a lot of restrictions. And to me, it is not freedom when you go to a public school and you learn English. That's not freedom. Because they're not learning about me, and I'm not learning about me either, or my people. I believe in a real bilingual opportunity. And it's just now beginning to happen in a lot of places in Alaska, Southeast. A lot of the people got books now with the language written in it. A lot of us have more of those opportunities. My grandparents, they don't know how to read that Tlingit. It's a little bit different nowadays. Just a little bit different dialect, kind of, than the days when they spoke it. Other than the influence of the government on this, I don't have too much more to say, other than I go with the people, Al Larson and Raymond here, that emphasize freedom, the importance of what the Constitution says, because I have gone through, and my people have gone through, an awful lot of changes with the government deciding at alternate times that they've either done right or wrong, or they're going to try something new with us. And, you know, I spent my life in a BIA boarding school, in their boarding home deals, and then they're going to change that and decide they're going to send me back home. And after a while, you get confused. You don't stay in one place. You don't learn enough about one people, one way, or anything. You're just kind of floating around, getting a little bit of everything. And then the government says, well, now we've got a law to help remedy all those things. Well, I've been through too many of their programs, and I think I don't want my baby to have to go through those programs. I am thankful there are laws or something being said anyway. I'm still confused about whether, you know, adopt a law or not. I don't know, because I don't know the law that well. I do know that some of these things got to be changed again. But I was reading the Indian Child Welfare Law or Act or whatever. I take particular interest in that because I've kind of been adopted out, you know. I found, when I was 14, I found a real good home I wanted to live in that was a Native home. And there was 11 kids in the family, and they said, one more won't hurt. And I loved it there. But the state, they knew what was best for me, so They sent the state troopers over to where I was staying, and they took me away and put me in this white family with that, and they had a habit of drinking a lot. And so they would drag me up in the middle of the night to show me how they could dance or something. And that was what I got to stay in by choice of the state. I'd like to see things limited on government regulations of my people. I can say, you know, I appreciate the efforts, as long as they are sincere, to let us live our own life. That's all I have to say.
Diane Benson. She was speaking at last year's hearing on the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. I'm Paula Schiller, and you've been listening to Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.